This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello everybody and welcome to the latest edition of the Royal Blue Podcast. I'm your host Conor O'Neill and I'm delighted to be joined this afternoon by Adam Jones, Joel Thomas and Gav Buckland as we look back on Everton's opening Premier League game of the season against Chelsea. The world of transfers as it seems the Blues are heading for a triple swoop in the summer window. And of course, address the big issue, and that's Dominic Calvert-Lewin's injury and why it leaves Frank Lampard light up top. But lads, there is only one place to start, and as it goes to Park, all four of us were there on Saturday as Everton kicked off their new Premier League campaign at home to Chelsea. Unfortunately, they fell to a disappointing 1-0 defeat as Jorginho's first half penalty in stoppage time was the difference between the two sides. But Joe, I think in terms of, you know, you wrote this in your verdict post-match, there was, despite the disappointment, obviously the fact Everton lost the game, there were signs of progress, wasn't there? And there were signs of, for the first time in a long time, Everton fans had something to watch and be positive energy by, I think, leaving Goodison Park. It wasn't all doom and gloom.
Absolutely, Conor. You know, I think it's always very disappointing to lose your first game of the season. It's always even more disappointing to lose your first game of the season at home. But I think when you look at the context in which Everton are operating, I think that there were plenty of positives to take from Saturday. Obviously, this is a side that came very close to relegation last season. We all know that. There are a couple of new faces. We all know that they need more new faces. Frank Lampard knows that, and we'll come on to transfers later. They came up against a Chelsea side that, like Everton, is in transition as well. I think it's fair to acknowledge that they will probably get better in the coming weeks of the season. But they've still got a side that's absolutely loaded with talent. And I thought for large parts of the game, I thought Everton competed with them. I thought they defended pretty resolutely against him. James Tarkowski, you know, obviously makes a difference at the back, but they look very solid at the back against Chelsea. They didn't cause too many problems against Everton. And I thought even going forward, there are a few glimmers of hope. We know that Everton need a striker, but they probably needed at least another forward option even before Dominic Calvert-Lewin got injured. But to lose him on the eve of the campaign, you know, just felt like a bit of a hammer blow in the circumstances. Although Everton didn't create too many clear-cut chances, they got to lots of promising positions in the final third where, you know, if they hadn't had a striker, you know, a regular striker, they probably would have turned 50% chance into 75% chances. Gordon had a couple of, you know, had a header, had a couple of opportunities to get into better positions. Dele Alli had an opportunity in the box. I mean, if Damari Gray managed to play through Anthony Gordon, then it could well have been a bit of a different story as well. But overall, you know, I thought that Everton looked quite strong, looked quite resolute, brilliant at defending corners at the back, especially once Mason Holgate came on. You know, things will get better, the side will strengthen. I thought the question marks that are there are questions that everybody at the club knows about, and I'm sure they'll do their best to address in the coming weeks.
Adam, you were alongside Joe in the Goodison Park press box on Saturday. And for you, did you see no real signs of encouragement? I know, were you a bit buoyed by what you'd witnessed? Okay, it was a defeat, but at least Everton look like they got a pattern, a way they want to play. And Frank Lampard has clearly worked on things over the summer, one of them being defending corners and defending set pieces.
Well, that was a major improvement, wasn't it? And I suppose, you know, we can only, I don't want to make a sweeping judgment on, you know, the defending of set pieces after just one game because
they have to deal with 16 corners though.
Yeah, so very true. And I think, well, you know, the substitution of Mason Holgate proved quite important in that sense because he dealt with, especially those near post corners, he dealt with a good few of them himself. But, you know, there were you know, individual games last season where I thought Everton dealt well with set pieces. It's got to be a more general thing, and I suppose we can start making a judgment on that when we get a little bit further down the line, a few weeks, maybe a couple of months into the season, and we can maybe see how Ashley Cole is maybe changing things going forward a little bit as well. Maybe we'll only see that when Dominic Calvert-Lewin comes back, or, you know, a new forward comes into the side, etc. But yeah, I think that was one of the major positives that you can take from it. I think there were a lot of individual performances that you can take you know, a lot of positives from. I thought Nathan Patterson was strong. Tarkowski obviously was strong. As I say, Holgate, I think, when he came on, thought he did quite well. Iwobi and Decore in the midfield, you know, even though the latter gave away the penalty, which ended up being the deciding factor, I thought that was probably the best game I've seen him put in for a good long while, to be honest. And it was just interesting to see what Frank Lampard had said before the match. He said he wanted this side to play with a little bit more bravery this time. You know, obviously they didn't have the weight of a relegation fight on their shoulders. You know, he didn't want them to lose that sort of defensive organisation that they had against Chelsea last time out, but it didn't need to be this sort of backs against the wall approach. They could take a little bit more possession, take a little bit more time in possession, etc., be a little bit braver on the ball. And I just thought it was very interesting to see the effects of that on the pitch. I do think that that was the case. It probably started from the back with somebody like Tarkowski, who's obviously as comfortable as he is in possession, bringing it through to midfield. I think Iwobi was really good in moving the ball on quickly to those at the top end of the pitch. And then at the top end of the pitch, obviously, it was a little bit toothless. I think they kind of made a few wrong decisions in certain scenarios, maybe didn't take chances as they came to them as well as they could possibly have done. But, you know, let's be honest, Chelsea are a team with, you know, a lot of quality. They've added even more quality to the defence in particular. Looking at that back five that they put out, you know, on paper, that's a phenomenal back five. So Everton going up against that without an out-and-out striker, it was always going to be a difficult task. And I think, you know, in general, that's got to be a performance that Frank Lampard can take a whole lot of, you know, a whole lot of comfort from, because I do think the players did take on board, you know, it's kind of, you know, wanting to play the ball a little bit more. He said he's going to go back with his players and view little sections where he thinks, you know, you didn't have to go long here. You could have played an extra pass and gone in behind, etc. But, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about it in a little bit, but you know, the potential signings could obviously help that along further down the line as well. But in terms of a start to the season, only being separated by, you know, a bit of a clumsy penalty between Everton and Chelsea, I think that's got to be seen as at least something of a positive start to the campaign. And, you know, hopefully we'll see Everton build on this in the next few weeks.
Gav, there was times last year where I think Frank Lampard even alluded to this himself, where he felt like the world was against them. I think when that news dropped early last week that Dominic Calvert-Lewin was going to be out for weeks, not days,
yeah,
possibly even, you know, 2 months has been mentioned, he must have felt like the world was against him once again before a competitive ball's even been kicked. I think we saw, didn't we, on Saturday, the need for a centre forward and just how big a blow that Dominic Calvert-Lewin hole that, you know, weren't able to fill, how big it really is, isn't it?
Well, it's not just Dominic Calvert-Lewin. It's exposed the fact there's no adequate backup centre forward, doesn't it, really? We said we needed a centre forward anyway, probably somebody who can play across the line. And Calvert-Lewin's absence has just shown that, hasn't it, really? So it's not, the argument is not like one, you know, it's two centre forwards possibly, isn't it? But if we just go on the premise of one. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you saw that on Saturday. I think me and Joe, I think we had conversations, didn't we, before the game about who play up top. I felt like that Dele Alli would be best suited. Didn't even start. I think, as you called it, I think Joe, you called it, saying Anthony Gordon would start centre forward. And that just showed you really the problem of it, is that there's nobody even in the squad who can play centre forward, even Matty. I mean, that Ali's the one, but he's out of form. I would have still started him anyway. I thought that header in the first half, I thought Ali would have scored that, you know, the Anthony Gordon one. I expected Ali to score that. I've seen him score header goals against Chelsea before. Yeah, and it just shows you we've strengthened a lot of areas, and we'll talk about strengthening the midfield, I'm sure, but I think we've taken our eye off the ball a little bit over the last month, knowing that Richarlison was going really for 30 all the summer. And we've allowed that to sort of drag on that, and it's now an urgent issue for us to address. I think it was saying before the pod, though, we said Cavalier 6 weeks, we can get away with 8 weeks, and he only misses the same number of games because there's an international break in September, of the 25th of September. So I think the 6 weeks is up just before the international break starts. So I won't say he's lucky, but you could get an 8 week break here and miss the same number of games as you do in six. So, and you saw that on Saturday. And I think it also showed the lack of a creative midfielder as well on Saturday, not having a centre forward. you're relying on people who are not centre forwards to pick up scraps and do things themselves, which is not ideal either. Yeah, and I'm with you on that. It's shown us, you know, an area of the pitch that we need to look at urgently, because leave it a couple of games, all of a sudden you're 3 or 4 games into the season, aren't you? And that's 10% of the campaign, isn't it, really, already? And, you know, so I know there's been some activity this week about midfielders and defenders and stuff, but we have a striker. And also, I still think we need somebody who can create in the middle of the park.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Joe, I spoke to Michael Ball this morning for his Echo column, and he had some pretty brutal and blunt points to make towards the Everton board in terms of the lack of not being in centre forward and the fact that, you know, Frank Lampard was allowed to kick off the season without, you know, a centre forward being brought in this summer. Do you think Gav's got a point there in terms of it's almost like we've missed the point this summer in terms of the centre forward option, and that all the focus has been on other areas, that Everton have forgot that they need to not only replace with Charleston, but they need to bring someone else in to give them a boost up top?
I think it's been clear that Everton have needed strengthening up top, certainly ever since Richarlison left. And I don't think that anybody at the club has been naive, that if you look at what happened after the Minnesota United defeat, the second friendly of the summer, Frank Lampard himself came out and was, you know, speaking quite openly about how there's avoiding attacking options up there. So it's clear that he sees the same issue as the rest of us. Obviously, efforts to find a striker haven't gone particularly well so far. They either haven't got the right person, or they've got close to them and haven't got the money for them, or haven't been able to get a deal over the line. I'm not entirely sure. I do think that the centre midfield was a very pressing issue. You know, I can understand why whilst Dominic Calvert-Lewin was fit and he came back from pre-season and he looked in great shape, impressed the coaches in training, looked all right in the pre-season friendlies and played well for the hour that he was on the pitch against Dynamo Kiev. So bearing in mind what we know about what he can do when he's fit, you kind of understand why they pressed ahead with centre midfield options as well, because I do think that Everton are, you know, probably 2 centre midfielders short of where they actually want to be. But there's no doubt that going forward, up top has to be a priority. Obviously, we know that centre midfield reinforcements are coming. It was a strange one seeing the Connor Cody interest emerge at the back end of last week at a time when Everton had six fully fit centre-backs. Yeah. I couldn't quite understand whilst they were interested in him at the back end of last season when they were looking for another centre-back in a search that kind of essentially ended up with James Tarkowski coming to the club. So the interest has always been there. And obviously we know the director of football, Kevin Fowle, has strong links to Wolves, where he was formerly the sporting director. So Wolves players are always going to be on the radar to a certain extent. But when, especially after Dominic Calvert-Lewin's injury broke, when the Connor Cody speculation started to mount, and obviously there was substance in it, as we've reported, it felt peculiar that that was coming at a time when clearly, you know, it should have been a striker was becoming increasingly necessary. So obviously with the injuries to Mina and Godfrey, all of a sudden the groundwork that had been done on Cody already is likely to come off and be very useful. But that doesn't solve the problem up top. They desperately need a striker. They needed a striker before Dominic Calvert-Lewin got injured. Surely they'll be doing everything they can right now to find one.
Adam, we are going to talk about transfers, especially in midfield. But someone who started in midfield for Everton on Saturday, and I thought was Everton's man of the match and was outstanding, was Alex Iwobi. It's been a far cry from, you know, you think this time last season, he's probably one of the first names at the top of the list of when Blues supporters be asked, do they want to leave the club? He's, you know, he started to show form towards the end of last season. He's really turned a corner and he's reaping the benefits, isn't he, of Frank Lampard's arrival. And, you know, you've done a piece this morning where you talk about what Frank Lampard told him about playing midfield, and it seems like he's hanging off every word his boss got to say to him, doesn't he?
Well, exactly. And I think I think what's interesting to hear about it is that it seems to be a very mutual sort of respect between Iwobi and Lampard. Like, Lampard whenever he gets the chance to speak about the OB, is always full of praise for him. He says he's just he'll put his heart and soul into everything. I'll ask him to play centre mid or right wing back or as a number 10 or wherever I want to play him on the pitch. He can just stand up and he'll have no arguments about it. He'll just do it. And you know, it's really good to see Iwobi talking about things like that. And you know, he talks about the fans as well. Whenever you know he's trying to progress the team forward, he might misplace a pass. He's getting those rounds of applause and cheers rather than the groans that might have come in the past. And I think that's generally the kind of change that we've seen in the fan base since Frank Lampard's come in, isn't it? That sort of pivot to just a generally more positive attitude as much as we can have it, throughout the 90 minutes of the game. And, for somebody like Iwobi, it's clearly having an effect on his performances, because you can see now, even playing as a bit of a deeper midfielder, I think he's played in that position for Nigeria a couple of times. I can't say I've ever seen those matches, but I have seen.
You say you don't watch all Nigeria's matches?
I can't say I do.
Not a Super League fan,
but I have read reports from people who have watched those games, which have suggested that he plays very well in those sort of deep lying positions on the couple of times that he's played there for Nigeria. So it was very interesting to see him take up that role at Everton, and it's something that I'd actually quite like to see him do in the future as well, because we saw it at the back end of last season. I think probably he's potentially the fittest player that Everton have got at the club at the minute, isn't he, in terms of being able to sprint absolutely everywhere throughout the 90 minutes. To be fair, I think Abdoulaye Doucouré probably gave him a run for his money, quite literally, at the weekend, because as I say, I think It was hard to split those two in terms of performance. As I say, it was a little bit disappointing that Doucouré was the one who gave away the penalty, but I do think that was maybe one of the only things he did wrong. Those two worked together as a pair quite well. It was good to see Iwobi being able to take the ball on the turn and be able to push forwards with it. I still think his best position is going to be if Everton were to switch to a midfield three, for example, him playing towards the front of that midfield three would be a lot better to see, and we could have somebody else playing in the six, maybe Amadou Onana when he comes in. We'll have to see here where Frank Lampard actually fits him into the system, and what system he's even going to play with the defensive injuries that have come up as well. So that'll all be interesting to see. But yeah, I think Alex Iwobi now, the way that he's managed to turn himself around over the course of the last 12 months, it's really heartwarming to see, and it's something that I absolutely didn't expect. But for, I would say, the vast majority of Evertonians now, he's probably one of the first names on a team sheet because of the hard work and the dedication that he puts in. He's probably up there level with Anthony Gordon for a lot of fans in terms of that commitment that he gives to his club over the course of a 90 minutes, which is it's really promising for him. And as I say, fingers crossed he can only take that forwards into the rest of the season.
Gavin, I think one of the things that struck a lot of people in Sir Goodison Park and highlighted the task that Frank Lampard's got, even if he's got players back fit, is the golfing squads. And I think this new rule about making five substitutes, you see the weekend Chelsea made five at Goodison, the players they're bringing on, the caliber of the players they're bringing on, it just highlights, doesn't it, how big a job Frank Lampard's got this season in terms of managing Everton squad, making them competitive and being on the meal to compete, because it's going to be tougher than ever before, isn't it? The fact that teams are allowed to make effectively changed half their outfield plays during a match.
Yeah, an absolute nonsense rule, that, isn't it? On
I was hoping you would say something like that. I mean, that
was a slightly different issue, but it is linked to the Lampard's problem, as you say. But you can never make enough bad decisions, can they? In football, the authorities, and this is just one of them. I get why coaches themselves say, I think Frank has spoken out that he wanted it, but as a fan, it just reinforces the superiority of the bigger clubs, as we saw on Saturday. It's now another tool, isn't it, to waste time?
Well, exactly.
I know there's only three windows, but it takes longer to make two substitutions at once than one substitution at once, and it just breaks up the game. And there was something today, was it 51 minutes the ball was in play?
Yeah,
I, was I think I saw 47.
47% of the time.
And when you consider that was it about 20 minutes added on time as well?
Yeah, yeah, 47% of the time that you were there, the ball was in play, which is just shocking. And a lot of that was to do with Chelsea time wasting and the way the substitutions just broke up the whole game. And I know I'm going off the subject slightly, but it is linked to Frank because, as you say, that's quite right. It gives you more flexibility and more firepower and theory and the ability to change things. But if you haven't got the players in the first place, you might as well have today, mightn't you, Evan? And then you'd struggle, wouldn't you? So, I mean, yeah, I think we have got numbers. You know, you'd be pretty confident that we'd always have a centre-half on the bench, wouldn't you, really? I think... And a midfielder as well, if we bring players in. But it's just bringing something different. And, I mean, you could say, let's say we bring Guy in, what's his name, Onana, is it?
Yeah.
In. Well, they're not too dissimilar to Alan and Decore, are they, really? You know, it's similar, you know, from what I've read. And I don't know a lot about this new lad, but they're similar. Similar sort of profiles. And Arna may be slightly more defensive-minded. So, but if you've got those four, what you want on the bench or on is something different. And that's why we need an attacking, creative midfielder, don't we? And Frank needs to not strengthen. He needs to give us something that we haven't got. And that includes, obviously, a striker and also includes an attacking creative midfielder as well.
Do you not think Iwobi could be that if he was using that role?
Is he a creative midfielder?
I'm not sure. Yes, sir. Personally.
Yeah, he played number 10, didn't he, a couple of years ago under Carlo, and he stank the gaff out, didn't he?
Well,
he could do. With his new confidence and stuff. But when I think of Iwobi, I don't necessarily think of somebody who's a Christian Eriksen type player.
I think when we come on to this and where Everton need to strengthen and things like that, we basically come back to the same things we've come back to for the past 18 months, really, on just how poorly the squad has been put together over a number of years. Obviously, it's a big character of the Mashiri tenure, the fact that money has been spent without any real clear pathway as to... There's been little strategy to everything that's been done. And obviously what hasn't helped in that has been the lurching from one manager to another manager, one director of football to another director of football. You know, every year or two, there's been a massive change at the top. And what you're left with is this Frankenstein squad of other different options. I think, you know, when we talk about the need for things like attacking or creative midfielders, I actually think Everton have probably got quite a few that could potentially relish that role. The problem has been getting the players in front of them and the players behind them for them to be able to do their jobs as you'd hope for them to be able to do. Obviously, Iwobi spent a lot of last season playing, you know, effectively in defence. As well as he did, that's clearly not his best position. I think that's probably part of the problem that Frank has had and Kevin Farwell have had over the course of the summer. Almost, if they want to rebuild this squad properly, they have to deal with some of the very most basic issues in the first place. And obviously, it's all well and good. Obviously, Onana and Gay might have same characteristics as Decore and Alan. Problem with Alan is we haven't seen him on a football pitch for a significant amount of time. You know, he missed so much of the back end of last season and he's not starting this season. I think Gay and Onana will probably be an increase in quality on there, but also just options for players on the pitch. And if that means that then Iwobi can play in the number 10 role, or if it means that someone else can, then that would hopefully make Everton stronger as a result of that. And also, you know, again, if they can get a striker so that you haven't got Anthony Gordon playing clearly out of position, again, it's trying to create a squad that's strong enough to have players actually playing in their strongest positions would actually be progress, which shows you basically the state that Everton were in, you know, going into Frank Lampard and Kevin Farwell's tenure. You know, they're having to almost completely rebuild the foundation of the squad before they can then go on about adding on the extra bits that might take them from survival to, you know, mid-table. Like, it's quite a damning indictment, really, of the policy of the last 5 or 6 years, isn't it? Or the policy that's run through the club over the last 5, 6 years.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Adam, fans have been rather restless, I think it's safe to say, when it comes to transfer incomings.
No.
But it does look like we are set to have 2, possibly even 3 in the coming days. Obviously, the man from Real was at Goodison Park on Saturday. And even though he was there, he's still not officially being announced. As we record on Monday afternoon, an Everton player yet. Adrisa Garnaghy is also someone who's been linked to coming back to the club.
Mm-hmm.
We all know what we're going to get from him because we've all seen him enough of him over the past.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on the two deals? Do you think it's a fine balance, or do you think it's, you know, a case of needs must for Frank Lampard, because midfield is a massive area that he's wanted to improve for a long time, and to get not one but 2 in will give him and the squad a big boost?
I think it is a big boost, isn't it? Like, I think there's little doubt in the two players that are going to be coming in are going to improve the options that Everton have got at their disposal. I think, you know, from that kind of perspective, in terms of like central midfielders, without talking about, you know, the potential of a creative midfielder that Gab's talking about, you know, you're then starting to pivot towards who can you potentially get out of the club before the end of the window, because I think you've got a lot of options in that area of the pitch once everyone's fit. Then you've got the two lads that have come in. You've got Decore, Iwobi can play there, Tom Davis, Andre Gomez, Alan, Jean-Philippe Gabamin. You've got Lewis Warrington, of course, who's still with the squad as well. You know, there's a lot of players there, a lot of them on not insignificant amounts of wages per week as well, which, you know, you're probably looking to move 1, 2, maybe even 3 of those on, whether that be on loan or permanently before the end of the summer. But I think in terms of the two lads coming in, I think it's undoubtedly a boost. And it was interesting to hear what Frank Lampard was saying about Onana in particular after the game on Saturday, because he was saying he sees him as potentially more of a number 8 as things stand, but obviously he can play in that number 6 role, especially if Everton were to play the system that they did play against Chelsea, as he called it, like a double number 6. He was effectively calling it against Chelsea. He said that Onana could absolutely fit into that role, and, you know, you could imagine Idrissa Gueye fitting into the role next to him quite comfortably as well in that sort of scenario. It was also interesting from Lampard to hear that, you know, at the end of the day, Onana is still only 20. You know, he's going to be coming over from the French league as well. There's a certain amount of patience that needs to be afforded. Obviously, this is a very exciting transfer, and he's somebody who's got an extremely high ceiling in terms of his potential. But I think maybe he is going to be one that might need a little bit of time to adapt to the Premier League and to his new surroundings, etc. So if he doesn't necessarily hit the ground running, I don't think that should necessarily be any sort of cause for concern. And I thought it was just quite interesting to hear Frank Lampard, you know, making that point as early as he is, because obviously I think Frank Lampard is somebody who's obviously well-versed about playing in midfield in the Premier League, and he's somebody who values player welfare very highly, doesn't he? And as we've already talked about his conversations with Alex Iwobi, you'll probably be having a lot of those sorts of conversations with all of the players in his squad. He wants to make sure that everybody's as happy as possible. So if he needs to make this point about the potential development of Onana early on, I think it was good for him to hear it, to be saying that as early as he is. I think it's, you know, obviously less of an issue with the potential arrival of Garner, because as you say, he's played for Everton for years. He knows the club very well. He knows the league very well. I think he's only improved as a player, to be honest, since he's went to Paris Saint-Germain. Obviously, he was playing in a very different system, and he was asked to do very different things when he was at PSG than he would have been at Everton. But I think that's maybe improved him as a player in terms of his, you know, ability to progress the ball forwards, whether that be in terms of passing or in terms of dribbling. So perhaps if Everton are going to be playing in this more brave fashion that Frank Lampard wants to see in the future, perhaps we might be able to see maybe a little bit of a different Idrissa Gueye than we saw during his time at Everton. I do think we did see glimpses of that in his last few weeks and months at Everton before he did move to France, but it would be nice to potentially see that a little bit more often in the future. So yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, these are two quality midfielders, aren't they? So you've got to be excited about, you know, the potential boost that they could bring to that area of the pitch. I do think at that point on, though, you are starting to think, all right, well, we do need to get some of these other players out now, because I think the problem then becomes, if you've got players who are surplus to requirements just hanging around the club, even for a few months up until January, you know, in the financial situation that Everton are in, they probably can't really afford that all too much. So yeah, I think it just accelerates the need to get a few of them out as well.
Gav, there's an old saying in football that you should never go back. Arisa Garnagay, is he someone who excites you to be coming back to Goodison Park, or do you think he should have been looking elsewhere and a younger model like they have done with Onana, in terms of someone a little bit younger and a little bit more on the youthful side?
I get by your time both at sort of the ends of the career, start and ends of the career, as it were.
End of the career, yeah, that's a bit harsh, Gav.
It's 33, isn't he, Garnagay, in September, so he's more to the end than the beginning, isn't he, put it this way. I've said that players play on now, like the late 30s, you saw that on Saturday, don't you, really? So, Garnagay's never been a player that's excited me. I've always used him as a bit of a luxury, to be honest with you. I've done on the pod many, many times that for somebody whose main strength is tackling and just basically putting out fires, I think that's a luxury that you can't afford. Whilst doing very little else for me personally. But as I'd said, is he come back? Probably come back a slightly different and better player than what he was when he left Everton. A bit more experience, playing with better professionals, a bit more creative than what he's been. So I could see, why he'd want to sign him. I still makes me feel uncomfortable, to be fair, because of his age. And I mean, we've spoken about being clever with wages and stuff, and we're giving 33-year-olds decent-sized contracts. So that doesn't square with me, but I can see why you'd want to buy him, given Alan's... I think Alan's... Is contract up this year as well, Alan, is it?
Yeah, it's last season.
Yeah, so he'd be going at the end of the season. So it also makes sense with that to be fair. An honour is a... We were talking separately, but Guy, not for me, Clive, but I can see why they want to bring him in.
Joe, I think one of the big things to look at in terms of the deals, and, you know, Gav's just touched on it there in terms of, you know, just going to be the wrong end, but Onana's at the right end, you would say, and I think he's probably the first transfer I've made this summer. Look, I'm going to make this summer where they might have some resale value in terms of moving forward in the years coming up. You hope he's at the club for a long time, but given his age, he's fits that mold, doesn't he? You know, potentially they might get something for him in years to come. Where you look at the players, they've, you know, Tarkowski, Guy, kind of Cozy, if he comes through the door, they're at the latter stage of their career, and in many respects, Everton's probably the last kind of big club that they're going to play for before, you know, they look at retirement or dropping down the leagues.
Yeah, I think if you look at the transfer strategy, or from what we can make of the transfer strategy so far, then there's very much seems to be the case that there's almost two transfer windows that are running in parallel here at Everton. There is the we need to strengthen immediately, need to make sure that don't find that in the same position as they were last season. You know, Frank Lampard used the word robust a lot of times at the back end of last season. He talked about how he wanted to mould the team going forward. Obviously, they suffered a lot of injuries last year, and they've already suffered a lot of injuries this time around. But you can see in Tarkowski, who's played 30-plus games in the Premier League for each of the last 5 years. You can see in Connor Cody, who looks like he's about to sign. I think he's missed one Premier League game in the last four seasons. So you can see, and you can see this in Guy as well, where you're getting somebody that has an excellent fitness record, who knows the league well, who's experienced, who strengthens the first team. You know, in those players, you have players that can come in and they can hopefully project Everton from the relegation battle that they were in at the back end of last season to something approaching a lot more consistency and essentially consolidate. And if they can help propel this team into a scenario where they haven't got to worry about relegation all this season, then that gives Lampard and Farwell the space to then be a little bit more creative, to perhaps bring some of the young players through, like the likes of Stanley Mills and Lewis Warrington. And also the opportunity to kind of help nurture players like Onana, who is also 20 years old. We shouldn't expect too big a thing from him, but we should also remember that Evan Hour, by the looks of it, essentially agreed a £30 million deal at a time when, you know, they haven't been spending a lot of money on transfers. So as good as an exciting a deal as that is, and as much as it's the type of deal that I think most supporters want Everton to be doing, it would be peculiar if that happens in isolation. Bearing in mind, they obviously need a striker. If Onana comes through the door and then it's having to look for loans or the bargain basement when it comes to strikers, I think, which are needed now, then I think some fans might ask questions a little bit about how this strategy is played out. But obviously, Dominic Calvert-Lewin hopefully is out for 6 weeks and no more, and comes back and is the forward that we know he can be. But I think, you know, you look at the same with Onana, you look at Dwight McNeil. I know he's got 134 Premier League appearances, but he's also only 22 years old. So whilst you've got those older heads like Tarkowski and then potentially Cody and potentially Guy at the top end of the scale, immediate enforcement's improved now. The bottom end, at the other end of the scale, you say you've got Onana, 20 years old, hopefully have a bright future. We talk about resale value. We don't want to be talking about selling these players on before they've even put on the blue shirt. But obviously, you know, there is a deal there, and this is perhaps something that's been lacking from the decisions and the arrivals over the last few years. There's a player there that, even if it doesn't quite work out for Everton, there's still an opportunity to, you know, find some interest and perhaps move him on, either at a profit or if it does work out really well for him, or if it doesn't work well for him, still get something back for him. In the same way it happened with Moise Keane, obviously, you know, he hasn't had a good time at Everton, but despite all that, after going on loan at PSG and doing so well there, he's ended up on a contract with Juventus, which means at the end of the season, he'll get a substantial sum of money. You know, Dwight McNeil, again, feels like an investment. We know there's a lot of potential from what we saw in his early days in the Premier League. He's only 22 years old. Hopefully he can push on from that. And again, you see them, you know, McNeil likes Onana, Gordon's only young, Patterson's only young, those type of players being that younger foundation which will take the squad further going into the, you know, when you talk about long-term progression.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Adam, another player who Joe just mentioned, who looks to be Goodison Park bound, to the surprise of many, I think, Connor Cody, mm-hmm. a defender, a centre-back, mm-hmm. a Liverpool fan. It has been mentioned, but yeah. What were your thoughts on when you first heard of Everton's interest and how the deal has developed? And although, you know, it now makes perfect sense given the injuries to me and Ben Godfrey.
Well,
at the time on Friday, when the news initially broke, that kind of perfect sense didn't add up, did it? It wasn't what was on everyone's lips. Well, that's certainly the Evertonian's lips.
Well, that's it. I think that's the deciding factor, really, isn't it? What has essentially, you know, happened to Godfrey and Mina over the course of the weekend, which you couldn't possibly have predicted. I do think that now is kind of swung round to this Connor Cody stuff making sense, because yeah, I do understand what people have seen as saying, that he brings certain qualities to the Everton backline that, you know, have been missing over the last few years in terms of, well, particularly leadership qualities. I know James Tarkowski, you know, brings that certain caliber with him as well, but you know, it's always nice to have those sort of options. And he is essentially a back three specialist, isn't he? And it sort of exemplifies this flexibility that Frank Lampard at least wants to have. You know, he's talked a lot about wanting to play a 4-3-3 in the future, but you know, it's still seemingly apparent that, you know, a three man or five man defence is something that Everton could use over the course of the coming weeks and months. So it wouldn't be a bad thing at all to be bringing somebody who's a bit of a specialist in that system into try and bolster your options. He's somebody who's going to be dedicated, you know, as he's shown over his time at Wolves. He's desperate to get into the England squad for the World Cup. So he's going to be, you'd imagine he's going to be...
He's playing his hands.
Well, that's it. So, you know, at the time, I did think it was a bit strange, because that would have left Everton with six fit centre-back options at the time. And even if they are going to be playing a sort of three centre-back system, shall we call it, I did think that was maybe a bit over the top, especially for the fact that I still think if you're going to be playing three at the back, when Seamus Coleman comes back into the side, I think he fits in as a third centre-back better than he fits in as a wing-back. Yeah. So add that into the mix as well, and you do have a wealth of options. You've got Reece Welch, of course, as well, who's still in and around the first team as things stand. It'll be interesting to see if he gets a loan move before the end of the window. But yeah, at that time, it didn't really make a lot of sense to me. But now that we've had the injuries, you know, it does make sense, doesn't it? You know, he's somebody who's proven dependable over his time at Wolves. At the very least, I think he's only missed one game over the last 4 years or something like that, and that was due to COVID. So he's not somebody who, you know, touch wood, gets injured very often. And you know, it goes back to what Joe was saying before, that Lampard has kind of repeatedly said over the last couple of months he wants to make this side more robust, and you can see with the signings of Tarkowski, with the potential arrival of Connor Cody, that's clearly the pathway that he wants to take Everton in the future. So, you know, and especially the fact that it's a loan, you know, potentially a loan with a potential option to buy as well, that I think that strikes me as probably the best deal that Everton could have got, because it means the ball's in their court a little bit more than anything else, doesn't it? So it seems to me very, very low risk, a quality player in a position that Everton now do need another player to come in for, like for the next couple of months in particular, while Godfrey works his way back to fitness. I just don't think you can depend on Yerry Mina, regardless of what the time frame is on his injury.
We feel like we've had this conversation on the pod a thousand and one times, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So I just think it does make a lot of sense to me now, but I think that's in retrospect of what happened at the weekend. I wouldn't have been saying this on Friday, let me say that.
Gav, about you, is it a transfer that makes perfect sense? Did it make perfect sense to you before the injuries at the weekend, or was you like Adam a little bit baffled as to why he was making the move, or was you always on this one from the very start?
Funny enough, me and Joe had the conversation before the game, didn't we, about that, the number of centre-halves that we had.
This is it, was it?
Yeah. Michalenko's already, he played centre-half, didn't he? We've got, you know, which is Andy. Duffin Agley was good when he came on Saturday, by the way. Thought he looked useful. Mm. Yeah, and it makes him, once about that, I was going to say, did Frank know something we didn't? But considering like Mina went off, that wasn't totally unexpected, was it really? I think we need Cody. I like Cody as a person and as a player. I think it'd be a real asset to us. As Ad said, he's comfortable in a three, which is probably one of the reasons why, you know, Wolves may want to move him on, because I think they want to change their style. For somebody who never scored any goals as well, was he the top scoring centre-half last season or thereabouts, I think, Cody?
He was up there. Scored the winner against
them. He did, yeah.
I'll tell you that.
Never ever scored for Donkey's years. It was that stat, wasn't it? I like Cody. I see this as basically, if it's a loan, pounds for a penny, I think we'll be informed at the end of the season. I'm just thinking, when's Keenan Holgate's deals up? I think Keane here after next season.
He's still got a while, I think.
So you can see probably one if not both of them being moved on at the end of the season. They are like Cody. He's better than what we've got. And I think a back three that's got Cody and Tarkowski in, with another, you know, is an upgrade, yeah, to be honest with you. And I'm just wondering whether, you know, I mean, that's the thing with Mina's injury. You wonder that they probably want to move Mina on at some point. Maybe that's why they were looking at Cody. But I don't think that's going to happen yet. But no, I like Cody as a person, as a player, and I think it'd be a real asset to the club.
Joe, I think, you know, Gav said there in terms of a real asset. With Cody, it feels like they're getting more than just a centre-back, doesn't it? You know, you look at Tarkowski and the impact he's had since he's coming in terms of that leadership style at the back, you know, not being afraid to tell people what to do and where to go. You get the feeling that Connor Cody's going to come in and be exactly the same. He's almost like, you know, Frank Lampard's another captain to add to his ranks and someone to take responsibility at the back.
That's it. You know, if you think of, you know, one of the allegations that was put to Everton through some of the lower moments of last season was that there were a lack of leaders there, a lack of captains, and all of a sudden, you know, Tarkowski's signing introduces one. We know how prominent Seamus Coleman's role was behind the scenes and on the pitch last season. We saw the emergence of Jordan Pickford, who's obviously now got the captain's armband. I mean, if you throw in Connor Cody to the mix and that as well, then you think there's some really strong positive personalities. You know, I was speaking to James Tarkowski after the match on Saturday, and one of the things that we're talking about was his leadership, and he was saying how much he actually enjoys that role and how much he sees it as genuinely part of his job to try and help and guide people on the pitch. And, you know, when obviously we're talking about the kind of the dual strategy transfer window, if he's got somebody like Onana in front of him who's picking up the trade, or if he's got someone like Patterson to the right of him who's you know, playing in the Premier League for the first time, you know, it's crucial to have that kind of core of leadership personnel within the side, and to have them in that position and to bring them into a position where Everton struggled so much with last season. Just it really is genuinely a big step forward. You know, you would, you know, season's one game old, and Everton have issues to address in a couple of areas of the pitch. But you'd be hard pushed to put money on a side that has England's number one in goal and Tarkowski and Cody is part of the back line in front of them as being real relegation fodder, because you think surely they're not going to concede too many goals and surely they're not going to lose their head too much. There's always going to be a strong personality there that can, you know, during big moments in games or times when things are going against them, can help pull the other players around them and make sure that they keep focused. It's going back to doing the sensible things well, and that feels like Lampard and Fowler are in the process of building a squad that perhaps does the sensible things well, and with the exception of the issues up top, which again have been exacerbated by a surprise injury at the beginning of the season and are surely in the process of being dealt with. You know, you look at a side that can do the simple things well and then hopefully find a few, you know, little bit of finishing touches around the edge, and then be a bit creative, a bit innovative, and to see what Everton can really do to get the fans excited.
Gents, to finish up then, one final question. A simple yes or no answer, and we'll try and keep it short and sweet. But by the time we record on Friday to preview the game against Aston Villa and look back on hopefully a triple transfer swoop, will Everton have signed a forward player? Adam?
No.
Gav?
Say the question again, I missed the last one.
By the time...
My microphone went a little bit skew if, sorry, I missed that.
By the
not
time
we record... The moment, they're on podcasts.
By the time we record our show on Friday,
yeah,
will Everton have signed a forward?
No.
Joe, are you going to join the full house, or are you going to have a bit of optimism and give Blues something to look forward to ahead of Friday's show?
Yes.
Well, ooh, that is the answer that we were asking. Yeah.
Joe knows something we don't.
I don't, but yeah. One thing I would say is, or a couple of things I'd say is, one, it's been pointingly obvious all summer that Everton need forward options, even before Dominic Calvert-Lewin's. So surely a lot of thoughts have been applied to that in the first place. And two, in fairness, and obviously this makes our job a lot harder, but with the exception of Tarkowski, when you look at the signs that have been made so far, they've all come out of the blue. Everton have actually done quite well to keep a really tight ship. Onana came from, whilst we may have been aware of the interest in some of these players, you know, Onana, McNeil and Vinagre all just came out of nowhere. And, you know, within 24 hours of the rumours having emerged, deals were effectively done. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's a striker, you know, that has been signed by the time they start on Saturday. And that isn't me speaking with being cryptic either. That might be more hope than judgment, but I think there will be.
I think that means Joe's playing number 9 for us on Saturdays. He's sort of
if I am, we really are in trouble. So,
well, we will leave the listeners with that thought, Joe, of you leaving the line for the Blues on Saturday for the park. But lads, thank you very much for joining me to look back on what's been, I think we can all say, an eventful few days regarding Everton Football Club. We will, of course, be back on Friday to preview Everton's upcoming Premier League clash with Aston Villa and also look back on all the transfer goings on, which we expect will hopefully be a fever pitch by then, and players will have, few new additions will have already been in, and hopefully a few more will be on the radar of the club. But for today, you've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.